That's why we kick off the show this afternoon by welcoming in from WBZ in Boston, our friend Michael Hurley. Hello, Michael.
Hello, no pressure on me to set the bar high.
I mean, you are the man. You're the leadoff hitter, getting on base, scoring runs, making things happen.
I may not have power, but I can poke one over the second base head and jog over to first base. No problem.
I have no doubt about that. Before we talk sports, though, could we get a capsule review of Disney on Ice?
Magical, as always. This would be, I don't know, since I've had kids, number 5, 6, 7. I don't know. We go a lot. it's always a good time. I will say, though, they tried to fit, like, 80 movies into that little hour and a half show. I like it a little more based. I want to get into the story a little more, but you know, maybe next year.
So it's more just like a greatest hits thing.
Yeah, they're like, here's this princess song, dance, move on to the next one. It was like a what's it called? Conveyor belt of just princesses coming through, but entertaining.
Yeah, it's because you need your time to process each individual princess and what they bring to the table.
Though I will say, every time I go, I'm always like blown away by something. Sometimes they put fire on the actual ice. My brain can't process that. And this time they had Lightning McQueen and Mater from Cars out there. And I don't know how they were moving around. I'll be honest with you. It's beyond my scope of understanding. So it's always good to, as an adult, have a little wonder left in your life.
No question about that. Speaking of wonder, what do you think about this Patriots coaching staff so far?
I wonder how they'll do. I think we can all sort of see the defense being largely intact, you know, Steve Belichick moving on, Bill Belichick moving on, but still believing that defense can be one of the better units in the league, both, you know, personnel-wise and coaching-wise. It's hard for me to overstate anything offensively with Alex Van Pelt, with the entire coaching staff they've built. Without knowing the quarterback, without knowing who's going to be playing wide receiver, those factors are still infinitely more important than the coaching. So it's hard for me to really, you know, I know everyone, this is the time of year to opine based on feelings and whatever, but it's hard to really have a strong opinion on any of them without knowing the players that will be on the field.
Getting any feel for what direction they may go in the draft?
One answer from Alex Van Pelt the other day stood out when he was asked if he could envision Mac Jones as the quarterback. He didn't say yes. He just said everything's on the table, blah, 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 and then came back to everything's on the table. I think if Mac Jones were in the plans, they would have the easiest thing in the world is to say, yes, I could envision that. Mac had a tough couple years, but we believe in him X, Y, and Z, but everything's on the table. So to skip that first part leads me to believe that they're going to go for the quarterback, whoever might be sitting there for them at number 3.
Boy, what a remarkable career he had, and I know you've shared some thoughts already. Can you talk a little bit about the contributions of Matthew Slater through the years?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where the actual position on the field is what it is. I mean, he was good at it. He was great at tracking down punts, at coverage, kick coverage, whatever it may be. But it's just sort of the culture to me. His retirement is, you know, we know Bill Belichick's moved on, and now with McCourty leaving last year, with Slater leaving this year, the fabric of, you know, what we came to know as the Patriots for so long is largely gone. And you still have it with Jerod Mayo, you know, Dante Hightower's on staff, but without the roster having guys that have won multiple Super Bowls, I think the only one left is Jonathan Jones. David Andrews as well. Those are the only two players left on the roster that have 2 Super Bowls with the Patriots. So, you know, it's part of life. Things move on, but I think it's just another chapter closed in what was the most, you know, unbelievable run of football we'll ever see. Unfortunately, we can't slow time down. I think we all wish we could, but his retirement is just sort of the latest in that. I'll say this, though. He's, you know, 37, 38 years old, Slater is. He seemed to get in better shape as he went on, so I almost kind of believe he could keep going for a couple more years, but I would imagine the physical toll has taken its toll on him.
Yeah, and to me, he just always represented the professionalism of the Patriots at their best.
Definitely, and that's, you know, there was a lot of not lean years, I would say, but as it got in those leaner days these past few years where talking to us wasn't the most exciting thing, where speaking at your locker after another loss wasn't at the top of anyone's to-do list, but he always had the right perspective. He's always, and that's just with us. I think of it this way. You know, there's days where, I don't know, you just don't have it, just anyone in any walk of life. But, you know, from a reporter standpoint, if you're going up to his locker, you know that he's going to be, he's going to have the right level of energy. He's going to be thoughtful. He's going to think, he's going to put effort into it, and it would make you make sure that you're on your best because, you know, you don't want to be the slacker in that conversation. And so I can only imagine how that translates to teammates, whether that be in the weight room, the locker room, in the meeting room, just that type of person that elevates everyone around him. It's hard to quantify, but he was certainly the embodiment of that.
Speaking of conversations with Patriots, so what do you think of Gerard Mayo's new, more casual approach to talking to the press?
It's going to we're going to all be like wounded puppies out there in the seats. You know, Mr. Mayo, could we ask you? You can ask him anything, and he can answer anything. And I actually, late in the season this year, I forget the exact question, but it was something, you know, that Bill Belichick would never in a million years answer during a midweek press conference. But Mayo was asked it. He answered it thoughtfully in 60 to 90 seconds. He didn't create a headline with it, but he was honest. He was human about it. And it's just sort of, it was like a reminder, like, oh, it can be done. You know, not everything has to be held like a state secret. So there's going to be an adjustment from the reporters of what can be asked and to actually expect answers. There's questions, certainly, Bill Belichick has been asked over the years that the question asker knows that there's not going to be an answer, but you kind of have to ask the question. Now there will be, and there'll be a little bit more, you know, conversation. So it's going to take some adjustment for sure.
We're talking with Michael Hurley here on Downtown. What are your thoughts on the dynasty so far?
Well, it's all right. It's pretty good. It's entertaining. It's very well done. I will say, in terms of, there's been so many documentaries and NFL films mic'd up that we've seen hours and hours and hours of this stuff that, A, there's a ton of rehash. Like we lived through it. We know Drew Bledsoe was the starter, et cetera. And then it takes three episodes to win the Super Bowl. It was a little bit of a slow start, but I do think it's a show that is leaning on the drama and the friction and the conflict. So that's why I think, you know, the Spygate episode that hit today was probably the best one so far. Having seen, you know, some advanced screenings of the further episodes, the Aaron Hernandez one is very intense. It's haunting. It's very well done. So I think they focus well on that. I don't know that that's going to appeal to Patriots fans all that much, I'm kind of stuck deciding or figuring out, were they trying to appeal to Patriots fans because they kind of harp on the controversies and the low points. But there's certainly, I don't know any Texans fans that are tuning in every week. So it's an interesting setup, but I think ultimately, you know, this time of year, the timing of it is great because what are you going to do, not watch in the middle of February when there's no football? So smart by them to do that.
What's wrong with the Bruins of late?
That's a fair question. Well, they got on the road, so that seems to have helped. I think a seven game homestand is ostensibly a positive thing before Disney on Ice rolls into town. But it seemed as though, I don't know, they weren't sharp, they weren't focused, they weren't even close to their best outside of that 1-4-0 win over Vancouver, which was a big game for them. They just kind of lacked that energy, and even though they lost last night in overtime, I think they played well these past two games, and now they're getting Vancouver again. Vancouver's been, you know, sliding since that game in Boston. That kind of is part of their I don't want to call it a collapse, but they've certainly lost a lot more than they've won in the past few weeks. So I do think that they have a chance to, you know, they could, if they could come out of this little Western swing, they have Vancouver and then Seattle. If they end up with 5 or 6 points, I think that's a success and a sign that, you know, maybe they just needed a change of scenery. They needed a little spark or something because they just played flat for most of that homestead.
Hey, do you think Robert Kraft has sent John Henry a note or a card saying, hey, thanks for taking the pressure off and setting the bar really low?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if he did. John Henry might not get to it because if it involves the Red Sox, he might not have any interest.
Right. Yeah, put that on the... Sam Kennedy will answer that. I don't have to worry about it.
Exactly, yeah. Just what a... you know, growing up here, loving baseball, having the Red Sox is like part of the fabric of what we are as a community. It just stinks that the owner is content with letting them wallow away in obscurity. You know, if you walk down the street and ask someone to name the Red Sox starting lineup, I'm not sure you could get to the second spot. You know, it's sad that wasn't the case as recently as, you know, we saw in the 2021 playoffs how much people are eager to come out and support this team fervently. And the ownership doesn't seem to want to lean into that in any such way. So I think it's just disappointing. I know in the media, you know, if you're interested in, you know, taking the knives out, slinging them at Red Sox ownership, it's they're there for the taking. It's just at a certain point, it's bad for everybody, and I think that's where we're getting to.
And I feel like they've misread the market here. I mean, I've been a Red Sox fan for a long time and sat through some god-awful seasons, but there was at least always some level of star power there. So even if the team was mediocre, you know, you could go see the guys that were among the best in the game, and they're just a bunch of nobodies these days.
Yeah, and I would add to that, you know, there you hear Craig Breslow say, we don't want to sacrifice the short term in place of the long term. It's okay, but it's not as if this prospect pool that they have coming up is going to change them into a contender. You know, they'll have some probably guys that pan out decently. None of them are starting pitchers, so I'm not sure what the light at the end of the tunnel is if you're running your organization saying, all right, well, we need a couple of years for these guys to get here. A, you could build a big league roster in the meanwhile. That's not mutually exclusive. And B, I don't know that you're going to look to those guys as franchise saviors, whoever it may be in the prospect pool. I don't think they have that level of player or, you know, series of players coming up. So it doesn't make sense if they were to discount Fenway tickets by 50%, then I think people might be more accepting of it. But if it still costs an arm and a leg to go there as if your superstars are there, I don't really understand what they're going for.
It's tough to watch, but maybe I just need to take a cue from Disney and let it go.
Exactly. That's exactly right. You know, just to add, they did do Frozen 2 for the first time at Disney on Ice. So I was there for history, not to brag.
I think you should. I brag about that all the time. Michael, great talking with you. As always, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Sounds good. Hopefully, maybe the Red Sox will sign a player before then, but I doubt it.
Yeah, I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah.
Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.